chaos mind when I open my eyes. Hey, this has been a weird year, hasn't it? Well, this is going to be a weird episode. Are you ready to go on a musical adventure with me? Yeah? Okay, let's do this. Here, check this out. Doesn't happen systematically. Pass the hash laterally. What happened to me? I told you all the firmware. The backups in your battery. Responders won't find me. Did you just hear what I heard? Pass the hash? Trojan all the firmware? What is this? In short, my wiretaps appeared. It's the man in the middle still kicking in your ear clear. First place when I'm claiming my... Man in the middle? My wiretaps are feared. Was this song made just for me? What's the information age? What's the knowledge base grown? All these unsolved mysteries I really need to know. Who lived like this? With the box full of op codes locking down the top shows everywhere I drop flows. I fly words and birds in action together. Okay, I'm hooked, and I want to hear more. And if you do too, come along with me and let's dive into the world of nerdcore music. But two quick warnings. First, this episode has explicit lyrics, lots of swear words and stuff. Second, make sure to listen to this at 1x speed, okay? All right, now turn it up.
These are true stories from the dark side of the internet. I'm Jack Reciter. This is Darknet Diaries.
This episode is sponsored by Codex. Businesses are under attack from a new threat. Law enforcement sending urgent demands for customer data when they're not really law enforcement at all. This means law enforcement email accounts are extremely popular targets for criminal hacking groups. So how do you know if a request your company received was sent using a stolen email address? You often don't. Getting it wrong means exposing sensitive information about your customers. It's a security, privacy, and compliance nightmare. And it's happened to companies of all sizes, including large tech companies who never expected to be fooled. That's where Codex comes in. Codex is a dedicated portal built by cybersecurity and privacy engineers, along with former FBI and Met Police. Codex helps companies to verify, track, and manage law enforcement requests. They combine in-depth agent verification and global network of signals intelligence and behavior-based account monitoring to block fraudulent requests from imposters. Plus, all the case management, user notice, and reporting capabilities that you need from their custom CRM. Request a demo at codexglobal.com. That's Codex, spelled K-O-D-E-X, codexglobal.com. This episode is sponsored by Vanta. Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program, quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. As a special bonus, Darknet Diaries listeners get 20% off Vanta. Just go to vanta.com/darknet20 to claim your discount. That's Vanta, spelled vanta.com/darknet and the number 20. Okay, first on the playlist is Whitey Cracker.
This is DJ MC Whitey Cracker.
And that's spelled with the letter Y, the letter T, and then Cracker. Now to give you a taste of what Whitey Cracker's music sounds like, here's an appetizer. Hold up in a stingy makeshift apartment in the basement of the barcade in the darkness. Cable is running off in every direction and the records electronics manage every connection. Lights blinking, computers thinking, I'm tinkering. Living like the archetypal internet kingpin. Traffic on the scanners, but shadow, so I'm a shadow and I gotta get my weapons ready. Prepping for battle, load them with ammo, get them dangerous. Payloads in my codes, word viruses are getting contagious and I'm feeling like a Danish. With the sweetness, fingers on the keyboard typing, sure my leanness. I can beat this behemoth of a... You hear all this? Living like the archetypal internet kingpin? Traffic on the scanners, been shallow, so I'm in a shadow. And then he says, fingers on the keyboard, typing, showing my leetness. I guess that sort of frames my curiosity. How leet are nerdcore rappers? Who is Whitey Cracker? To find that out, we have to stop and rewind the tape to when he was a kid. He grew up in California and in Colorado and was introduced into tech by his father.
He worked for Hughes Aircraft and he was working on like peacekeeper missiles, just all the Cold War cool stuff, but absolutely hated California.
This is Whitey Cracker talking.
So moved back to Colorado and he was working with Martin Marietta, which became Lockheed Martin. He's very much hardware oriented and I kind of fell more into the software field, but I was lucky to have a computer in my house kind of when they weren't as ubiquitous as they are now. So that was really an advantage, I think. But I just, the first time I ever touched a computer, I was just super fascinated with them. So just want to figure out everything, how they work.
We're talking the 90s here, when Whitey Cracker was in high school, and he was getting online then and looking to see what was there, which, by the way, there wasn't much online at the time.
I was really into like the bulletin board scene locally, and I think from there is kind of where I started reading a lot of text files, zines, and sort of the tales of the underground, and got real fascinated with phone phreaking and hacking and stuff, just sort of being like a natural extension to the understanding how computers worked.
The internet and computers were fascinating to him, so he kept going deeper and deeper to learn more about it.
My first real hack, I think there was the public library had a bulletin board system, and I found out how to like drop into a shell, and I turned it into an egg drop bot.
At that time, most people didn't have a persistent connection to the internet, but his library did, so he installed an IRC bot on it, which could act sort of like an admin of a chat room, something that was always vigilant, watching everything that was going on. This was cool as a teenager, to have remote control over an always-on computer and to actually put it to use.
Yeah, I just kind of really got addicted to the real breaking in the stuff. So I just kind of went on this little bit of a rampage, I guess, after that. But I hacked pretty much every school district in the state.
Now, before we get too far down his hacking path, at this same time, he was also learning how to make music on his computer. Oh, and just so you know, all the songs you hear while we're talking with Whitey Cracker were made by him. In the 90s, there were these programs called trackers, which would let you play samples at different pitches to make music.
Like Screen Tracker was the first one that I had used. And actually, a couple of the computer guys that I had, the other hacker dudes were super into electronic music.
Here's one of the songs he made while in high school using Screen Tracker.
What do you think about Whitey Cracker?
I think I would like to fuck him.
You know, I wasn't going to say anything, but that intro brings back memories I totally forgot about. When I was a teenager around that same time, I found some text-to-speech software. Whatever I wrote, the computer would try to say it. You could do male voices or female voices, British or American accents. And when I discovered this as a teenager, I made the voice say sexy things too. And possibly all teenage boys who discover text-to-speech programs for the first time get the computer to say something dirty just to giggle. At this time in the 90s, the cool place to be part of was the demo scene, and Whitey Cracker was right in the middle of it. The demo scene was its own subculture of the internet. It pretty much was just an audio and visual showcase made by independent artists. Demos were little programs, executables, that when you ran it, it would just display moving graphics and play music. That's all it did. But in the 90s, it was really cool to scroll through scene.org, download files, and run them to see what they did. Since Whitey Cracker was making music, he was all about the demo scene, uploading his music there and making friends with other electronic musicians.
I looked on like scene.org and I can't find a lot of the older stuff that I had. Like it was definitely like on bulletin boards, but we had this group called the Putang Clan. We had one called Multisync. And then there was a group called Category 5.
So at this point, Whitey Cracker was really into computers, using them to make music with other people and to hack stuff too. And being part of the demo scene sometimes blended right into the hacker scene, because a lot of apps that were used to play pirated games had cool little graphics and music built into the app to say, "This game was cracked by our hacker group," which made the hacker group so much cooler.
I remember WinNuke had come out, And it was like, you send out a band packet to port 139 and it would crash someone's computer. If you, and, you know, this is prior to like consumer firewalls and everything like that. So it like, basically if you had somebody's IP address and they had a Windows machine, you could invariably crash them. And I remember having that, and one of the sysops at this other BBS I had gone in, he's like, have you ever been on AOL? And I hadn't, but like, I'm obviously aware of it. But he was like, there, you can like just knock people offline there all the time too. And I was like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, so America Online, or AOL, was a way to get online in the 90s, but it was designed for dummies to use the internet. And so because it was so super easy to use, it attracted a lot of newbies to the internet. And in some IRC chat rooms, this meant AOL users were easy targets to try to hack. Whitey Cracker was finding ways to hack into AOL servers and look up information on their users.
Don't fuck with the Whitey Cracker.
We were working on like defacing keywords, and we had access to the Chris. It was like the Consumer Resource Information Service. Like, so you could look up, like on AOL, you could like look people up and get their credit card information, their address, phone number, you know, just all the notes on the account. So really, like, it was crazy because back then when people were actually anonymous on the internet and weren't trying to put all their real information in Facebook and stuff, it was really just funny because you'd be talking a shit to somebody on, you know, AOL, and then tell them where they live, and you wouldn't see them sign on for weeks because they'd just be scared of their minds.
Now, all this was going on while Whitey Cracker was still in high school. And he's also hacking into the school, because why not, right? I mean, for a teenager, it's sometimes just a simple question of, let's see if the school, which is trying to teach me about computers, knows anything about how to secure their own network. So he was able to get into the school's database, which allowed him to change grades for any student in the school.
I just had the perception basically that if you changed like one grade in a system, then, you know, it's obviously easy to find out, you know, who is behind it and stuff. So there was kind of a method to changing, you know, random grades and stuff. So there's no way to like really associate it with anybody.
So you changed your own grade?
I didn't change my own grades. No, never changed my own grades.
You just screwed with other students.
Change others. Yeah, that's the best way to do it. I'd basically gotten to like all the record systems, and I'd defaced all the web pages later.
Defacing a website is pretty much just making changes to a website when you're not supposed to be able to.
I would replace the entire front page. So it's like all you'd have to do is go to the domain and you would see it there. I would leave links to the original pages and stuff, but yeah, just replacing the, you know, the entirety of the page. Sometimes I would, you know, like mess with the, you know, like just take the existing page that's there and just mess with like the text, make it funny, and, you know, edit the pictures, and sometimes it'd replace it completely. But again, I think it was just a competitive atmosphere that, like, again, amongst ourselves, we were just trying to find the biggest fish in fry.
And so he was gaining street cred as a hacker, earning the respect of more people in the chat rooms that he was in.
I started getting into, like, I was really into hip hop and everything. So like graffiti was as like one of the elements of hip hop, I guess. And so I kind of really liked web page defacement. That seemed to be the most hip hop of all of the hacks you could do. So I remember the first kind of series. There's a Cold Fusion bug when it's a default upload. It was like in the examples of the Cold Fusion server, but some people would just leave this directory up there, and it allowed you to just arbitrarily upload files to web pages. So I remember just grinding out like local car dealerships. Web pages I'd see on TV, like, again, this was back in the late 90s and early 2000s. So it wasn't like most people had AOL keywords back then, which was like how you would visit them on the internet, since so many people were on AOL. So that, like I said, defacing keywords and defacing web pages just became kind of this sort of funny way to kind of use the hacking, but not there was glory in it, I guess. You're not sealing nuclear secrets, though.
This was fun. This was a rush for him. Making music and defacing websites became his two biggest hobbies.
First, it was like high-value target type stuff, corporate. And then for whatever reason, like, it was just like the mills and the govs just became sort of enticing shiny Pokemon to me.
Mills and govs? Those are top level domains. Oh, he's talking about any website that ends in .mil or .gov. So he's targeting military and government websites now. Some of the ways he got in were pretty simple too. He just had a handful of techniques, and he would try each technique to see if it worked. These were sometimes simple tools just to check if the web server was vulnerable, and if so, he'd exploit it.
I did, yeah, the city of Colorado Springs, like, so my local town, and I hacked, like, the USGS, Texas Department of Public Safety, so it's, like, their sheriff department. I did, like, AT&T, Acer, the FAA, New York Department of Agriculture, Oregon State Construction Contractors Board, the Oregon State Board of Education, pretty much every school district in Colorado, the Goddard Spice Flight Center International Program, the National Training Center for the Bureau of Land Management. Yeah, it was fun. But again, my purpose was just maybe like graffiti. I wasn't really trying to disrupt the inner workings of the U.S. government at the time.
So at this point, are you feeling like you're going to get caught?
I was fairly certain, like, because the handle that I went by, like the Whitey Cracker, the people just, they knew me as that anyway, like, because I had done music under it and stuff. So it wasn't like kind of a secret. But, and that's part of where, you know, I didn't delete logs. Like, I purposely, like, I was just making it so I didn't really think about the consequences, though, at that time. Like, I wasn't really, I mean, I wasn't 18, so I figured anything that happened to me, I could just get adjudicated out of or whatever.
At this point, Whitey Cracker discovered a pretty interesting thing that could potentially earn him money. He found some websites had referral programs. Basically, the website would pay anyone cash for referring a new user to the site. So Whitey Cracker realized, hey, if I had a lot of email addresses, I could send them all an email telling them to go sign up at this website, and I'd get paid for sending people there. So he entered into the world of spam. Step one, though, is getting the email addresses.
Okay, so on AOL, there was a member directory, but then there was also a bunch of chat rooms. And in the chat rooms, like, there's a feature you can click called Who's Online, and it would list who was in that room at a time. And the max room size is about 23, 24 people. There was just programs, it'll just automatically go through and click. So to gather the names, pretty much, you know, you would just go to all the public rooms and you would cycle through. And there wasn't initially any rate limits. So you could just basically get the entirety of AOL and just have something that's constantly running and grabbing names from the member directory. So you could take a dictionary file and then search for certain things that would be in people's profiles, and you would just scale out that way.
So you've got, what, a list of like a few hundred, a few thousand?
Millions.
Okay, step one is done. He has millions of email addresses. Next is to find the most profitable website that pays for referrals, but doesn't mind if people use spam to get those referrals. So after researching what websites to promote, he found the perfect site.
So porn was pretty much the... I wasn't even old enough really to view it, but a lot of these companies, they outwardly had a policy against spamming, but realistically under the hood, everybody knew. It was just kind of known, you know, this is like how the traffic gets generated. So there was choices to get paid per click or per sign up. So depending on how your traffic backed out, you know, in spam, obviously it's just, you want to go with the pay-per-click model. You
always can outstumble when it comes to fucking spam, homie. Believe that, playboy. You know me, I don't need no introduction and shit. Spamming around the whole city, pressing buttons, you bitch. On banging mouse, dangling, just spamming the shit. Stay on top, spam my bot, stay mailing, you bitch. Why that cracker get it right? Don't tangle and twist it. Hit town square every night, drunk, drinking that Chrissy. Spammers mad, don't like it.
So there he goes, sending millions of emails to people, urging them to visit porn sites and to join as a member. And the more people he got to click, the more money he'd make.
You don't know another spammer that can spam like me. Whitey Cracker represent, homie, the YTC. I'm a hard spamming hacker like Kevin Knievel. No damn regular program showing off for my peoples. I'm the number one spammer.
So you were making $1,000 a week?
Yeah, just about.
It's pretty good for a 17-year-old.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Do you remember things you were buying as a 17-year-old?
I mean, lots of like computer equipment. My wardrobe was insane. Like, I had just the most insane. Like Echo was like my favorite clothing brand, and I pretty much had every piece that they owned. But you know, I was taking my friends out to dinner and everything all the time. Bought a car, like I don't know, just whatever, you know. Like again, it was just.
Would your parents think that you had? How'd you get this money?
I mean, they knew, but like my dad was always just really. My parents are really traditional, and I was kind of at that point bucking education and stuff. I'd realized that I make more than my teachers, you know, not even really working, you know, and there's sort of this whole kind of teenage rebellion thing where, you know, every teenager does think that they know everything. But at that stage, I was really like, well, if this is like what's possible, then why do I need to, you know, continue to do this type of stuff? So that I think my parents, you know, my dad was trying to instill like work ethic in me, you know, going to work and showing up and this type of stuff. It's not, and I was like, no, it's the money that's important. It's not the job. It's the byproduct, the end result of what you're working for is the, you know, the key here. So we were at odds, I guess, philosophically.
There's a little place in my dreams where I go and I want to cheer up, it seems. No filters and no limitations to stop me from spamming and paper chasing. Send a million mails, not one complaint. See sure right away and there isn't a way. AOL doesn't sue anybody because they consider spamming a hobby. Everyone buys and no one jumps, and there aren't any anti-spammer punks. The post where you live on rocks, so because you live in the land where the cocks grow. Everybody has a credit.
Somewhere around here, Whitey Cracker dropped out of high school, which I understand. He's running circles around the school's network, so there's probably not much they can teach him about computers. And he's making more money than his teachers. He's feeling like he's got life figured out.
It's a spammer's paradise where everyone has an email and checks it twice. Buy anything without seeing the price and send money to Nigeria because the print sounds nice.
Cybercrime seems to be how some people, particularly juveniles, feel important. For Whitey Cracker, a 17-year-old dropout, this meant compromising and defacing multiple websites.
Kids like us, you know, we go out every day, we have fun, and we come home and rule the world.
He came to the attention of DCIS when he illegally accessed a Defense Contract Management Agency web server. Once inside, he replaced DCMA information with text and graphics in which he bragged about his exploits. The pattern was repeated on over 40 websites, including servers maintained by NASA. Agents from DCIS, NASA, as well as the FBI began to close in on the juvenile. Meanwhile, police in Colorado Springs were conducting their own investigation. They were tracking down an individual who had hacked into local school records. The minor responsible for the defacements was soon identified, and agents began to build their case. Whitey Cracker knew they were on to him.
Detective DeHart told me that they had a 314-page case report on the whole thing, and I was just like, that's huge.
The 17-year-old suspect eventually confessed to one count of computer crime under Colorado law. He was placed on 2 years probation and fined $24,000.
My eyes slowly rise.
house from a shut state. Steely and open and shut case. Ship prison by the syndicate. Micro chips implanted in my wrist to get branded. Murray shot scan it along with a handprint. In the biometric tracking is mandatory. When my story begins, just another prisoner was making demands. The cell doors open. Everyone exits their cells in a uniform motion. But none of us move until the guard is spoken. Cause I've spoken joy and a pleasant notion.
I think it was that the ride was over type thing. I mean, the one pack that is still kind of, again, it was just sort of a gentleman's agreement, I would say, but they were just like, look, like if you didn't fuck with the government, like we probably wouldn't have even come after you. And I was like, and I thought that was pretty interesting. So I've just had this gentleman's agreement with the government ever since that I just don't hack them. And ever since then, like, I mean, I've pretty much stayed out of, I haven't been raided since. And like, it's not like I kept my nose the cleanest, but at the same time, that was the pretty much just the biggest, I guess, takeaway is that, you know, the government will really roll over you if, you know, they have infinite budget and infinite time if you humiliate them.
But while he had a truce with government websites, he didn't see any problem with continuing with his spamming career.
Spamming is life. Because I realized that hacking is much more rewarding when you are making money doing it. So that was the, I guess, onus for a lot of it. But defacing things wasn't really profitable, unless you're obviously defacing something and putting a link to your gas card or something like that. The count don't bounce when responder is off. Got enough complaints just yesterday. Had to clean the abuse box out like a juice box. Find a new spot. Proxies are hot, so I get up on the script and I load another bot and shrink down the list like cotton. I gotta make a drop, man. It's biz ops hot, man. I think that, again, people have varying opinions on it. It's one of those things that I think everybody wants to do or wishes they could do, like, regardless of how annoying it is. Well, I won't say everybody, but that, you know, even in today's culture, like, you know, people are just like, listen to my mixtape or, you know, check out my YouTube channel, like and subscribe, like type stuff that really, like, getting, you know, into a million, you know, 10 million, 100 million inboxes, if you can do that and get that many eyeballs on your thing, like, you're obviously doing pretty well.
At some point, he realized online pharmacies were also paying very well for referrals. And so he started sending spam, trying to get people to buy medications from certain pharmacies. Then he also found sites that you could buy fake diplomas from, and they were also paying well for referrals.
If you send me another fucking text message to my cell phone, we're gonna have a problem. Better knock this shit off.
We blasted this diploma spam.
He actually figured out a way to send a bunch of spam through text messages in some campaigns.
I will sue you for every fucking thing you got. Do not call or text my phone again.
And then so a lot of the calls that are on that song are actually people that were spammed and didn't want diplomas. Court abstain, listen to the phone calls on the refrain. You won't hear a dial tone again if you keep up the attitude shouting at me. You got a text at 3 a.m. So what? I was trying to get your ass a degree, cuz.
You can kiss my fucking ass, and if I ever get another goddamn text message from you again.
You might be wondering, isn't all this illegal? Well, yeah, now it is. The CAN-SPAM Act was enacted in 2003, which was right around this time. CAN-SPAM is an acronym and stands for Controlling the Assault of Non-Solicited Pornography and Marketing. Yeah, after that came out, some spammers took a big hit, going to prison and getting hit with millions of dollars in fines. Whitey Cracker had to learn how to keep low and out of trouble while continuing to spam. Because honestly, major corporations spam us all day long, and they do it legally. So it's just a matter of making smart business choices. And with his years of background in doing all this, he was really good at it. And he was even able to legitimize the whole business, incorporating it and claiming it on his taxes and everything.
I guess like kind of what broke me out more into quote unquote serious musicianship or something was when I released NerdWrap Entertainment System in 2005. And it got traction just on the internet at large.
Included, defined, my masters and classes, headers I compiled and distribute. Open source if you'd like to contribute. A raise on a raise, my stack flows a tribute. The pushing and popping, XOR and nopping, nopping, systematic fire locking. My sequel knows no equal. Index with my brain, got a million people. Eagerly awaiting my macro advances. Running with my beta cause I'm taking chances. Increment I do while others key style. Flavor to the nth goes to the nth mile. Main function, harness execution flow. Arguments pass on and my program slow. Pass leap to the infinite, infinite. My functions are intimate. I know my code better than you. View source, my code is mental. To the exponential, cyborg the quintessential.
So while this album is called Nerd Rap Entertainment Systems, there was another rapper who named the whole genre.
So, MC Frontalot, he came out with a song called Nerdcore Rising. This, like, the genre, like, right around, I would say 2006, 2007, sort of really kind of gained steam. But Frontalot is credited with naming it. Realistically, like, there's even in within quote unquote nerdcore, there's all these like subgenres where, you know, Frontalot's like a graphic designer, you know, does web pages and stuff, but, you know, obviously highly nerdy. But, you know, his content is different than, you know, MC Lars, which is he's a literature, he has a degree from Stanford in 19th century literature. So a lot of his rhymes are more centered around the poetry and prose of that era. Me, like, I'd been doing music obviously prior to that, but my stuff was, it was kind of like this gangster rap for nerds type thing where I'm talking about, you know, hacking, doing all this stuff, criminal stuff on the computer and, you know, not outside in the real world type thing. But nerdcore sort of encompasses all of this sort of what, you know, we consider nerd culture, but I mean, now has kind of become fused more into mainstream as technology has kind of popped off a lot more.
Yeah. Do you think that it's unfortunate it's called nerdcore?
Not entirely. Like, I've always found it kind of an apt way to describe. I've always been proud to kind of associate with the genre. And I'm considered like one of the kind of forefathers of it, so.
Pulse active, man, I'm a mastermind. Backhand, back gaming with a faster mind. Game theory, yodel if my soldiers hear me. So solid, you better metal gear me. Steady gamer, you're a lamer. Need a second life just to give you some fame, huh? Bottle champagne, held by the power. Buy another one when the clock strikes the hour. Getting drunk.
So the nerdcore genre isn't always about hacking. There's a lot of nerdcore songs about video games, graphic design, programming, D&D, comic books, and sci-fi shows. Nerds cover a big range of topics, which means while I consider myself a nerd, I often run into nerds that I have no common interests with.
We are not the same. Yeah, and this is part of where I got Nerd Life tattooed across my stomach. Nerd Life on the tummy and I'm grabbing everything. And it was like kind of a play on Thug Life that Tupac had, but I got it on the 7th anniversary of his death, like when he was supposed to come back. So it was like September 13th, 2003. But if you looked at like older interviews of Tupac and stuff before he'd kind of gone really hard, like he was super into drama and, you know, he was like kind of like effeminate, and you could just sort of see this, like, that even to people can be nerdy about anything, I guess, is the biggest like takeaway. And like you said, I think that's a more of a beautiful way to communicate it, that, you know, again, just like people aren't, you know, if this guy's into comics and, you know, you're into this, some people are sports nerds, some people know, like, you know, everything about this baseball player or that basketball player or something. And it's just, I think the accumulation of knowledge is more like what I kind of identify with, and like what I say that Nerd Life is it's just being passionate about something to some crazy large degree. Mine just happens to be computers.
So Whitey Cracker's music career has been pretty successful. He's been able to do international tours with his music and play tons of live shows every year.
I get probably 5-6 fan mails a day that are just, you know, like, I got into computer security because of you, or I listen to your music all the time, like while I'm coding, or, you know, whatever. And that to me is just like teaching through music, or getting people like inspired that way, is a lot. Like, that's where I kind of feel the success comes in, is that, you know, my fans by and large, like, are all relatively smart and, you know, again, passionate, and that you kind of have to be a fan. And so, whereas, you know, once, if you're a Drake fan, you know, nothing against Drake, but that, the you have all this cross section, you know, is way different, and people don't like, I wouldn't say that like Drake inspires people to code or something. So it's a little bit different, but, like, you know, do you know who Deadmau5 is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, he actually plucked Anti-Sec out of the weeds, and he's been playing it out now, but we're re-releasing it on Mousetrap, his remix. So it's kind of, I guess, going mainstream in a sense, where, I mean, Deadmau5 is putting it on his album and stuff, so there's a little bit of that. I mean, still this happening to this day.
Okay, so yeah, Whitey Cracker made this song called Anti-Sec. Here, take a listen.
I'm the de facto leader of a movement, screaming hack the planet back in 99. Activism in its prime, global hell had the dot mill rooted. Alphabet soup in they troops, in the suits, kid, kicking down doors and seizing my equipment, blocking on my shipments, sitting on they hit list. Old day radical, emphatic beat addict in the stab hit. I envelope the game, call me Rabbit.
So this is a song about Lulzsec, which I'll have to do a future episode on sometime. But basically, Operation Anti-Sec was a hacking campaign conducted by a group of anonymous hackers called Lulzsec. And they hacked into a ton of websites, including Sony, PBS, the US Senate, and a bunch of other sites.
The Lulzsec kind of anonymous phenomenon, you know, I was involved in Project Chainology and some of the other stuff, but yeah, that the scene right around that time was really booming.
To the bleachers.
Pound Anti-Sec.
If you're sitting below deck in the lows, vote salute, bitch, and show some respect.
Pound Anti-Sec.
Pounding through your speakers.
Huh. It sounds like you was there watching what Lulzsec was doing, and at least being present for some of the things they did. So since he had a front row seat and was watching it all go down, and it was making major news, why not write a song about it?
YHB, Gary, stay toast like a strudel. Root shell on your bootstrap, now who's that? Bind the M, join and drop your whole C-class. Yeah, C-class, it is evident we flousing. Iron cannon in the proc list, deep dousing. Lean back, bitch, we be sending an injection. Magic quotes off, join table intersection. Put it up on base, then it won't get erased. Then 20 million.
Another thing that Whitey Cracker got involved with along his journey was Bitcoin. One of the songs he's known for is this one called Bitcoin Baron.
You know rappers like to rock chains. I rock blockchains, knock them out the box. I'm on Gox main. Key ring full of wallet data. I got a prey to my ASIC incinerators. Load a mine like a creeper one time in my circle. Sweat from the heat, crypto anarchy becoming a threat. So will we. You know rappers like to rock pools. I got pools, you guess women.
Bitcoin is currently worth something like $10,000 each right now, but when he got in, it was only like $50 per coin.
So the when Bitcoin was around like $60 or something, people were like, what do we do with it? Like, that, you know, what can be done with this? And Jason was like, just, well, you know, I'll feed homeless people with it.
So yeah, Whitey Cracker and Jason have fed over 200,000 people now through their Bitcoin charity.
Let the players play pumpkin. Hash function, pumping and dumping. Manipulate the market, flooded from the darknet, flooded from the deep web. Keep it a secret. Every exchange got the nerdy brands trading on the frequent. Wonder where the league went. They left the semen.
and online beaming. Up Scotty, this the future decentralized swag. Keep the work in your laptop bag. I'm a Bitcoin baron, I'm staring the status quo. Got that crypto going at that foul to blow. In the algorithm, gonna get him until prison sentence out of prison. Prison, that's a nerdy living.
Now, these days, Whitey Cracker holds a day job doing information security work.
Currently, I'm working at Ring.
Ring is a internet-connected camera that Amazon makes that goes on your front door.
I'm part of Amazon Digital Security, but I work under more for the Ring subsidiary, and there's a lot of considerations like privacy and security there that obviously I want to make that if I started a camera company tomorrow, I wouldn't have the reach and impact that, Ring does. So it's as a utility, just being part of that pipeline and being able to affect the products kind of the way that I would like to see them distributed is a real, that's where I see the benefit of working with a Google or a Facebook or an Amazon, is that, again, you can be in the trenches and you can affect the change that you want to see in these devices and, put your mark on them.
Got your neighbors wireless up in a tizzy, cause I plant little Trojans up in every major city. What you think I do on tour? Rap don't pay the bills. I'm chaotic, neutral swag with computer hacker skills. So check the stripes up on the jacket. I pay respects to the malform sin packet. Be metal in my girt, girt, girt online. I'm a filthy little hacker, but I still shine. Got an army on the grind, check the stamp on the time. What you click your finger up?
This episode is sponsored by Mint Mobile. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, I thought, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your own phone number along with your existing contacts. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/darknet. That's mintmobile.com/darknet. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/darknet. $45 upfront payment required, which is equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. So what do you want to be known as? Oh my?
Yeah, that's fine.
Oh my. I like that because it's the ohm as in the resistor.
I mean, that's where it came from.
I would be current.
Yeah, eyes current.
All right. We got Oh My up next. And I actually saw Oh My live once at an after party for a security conference. Let's take a listen to his music.
House nerd for life. Yeah, I'll say it with pride. I don't worry about the haters while I'm staying inside. I feel great with my internet connection, so don't hate on my internet connection. My life is the result of being deprived socially, always forced to stay inside when I had hoped to be hanging out with friends at movies they wanted to go and see, and hopefully interacting with girls I wanted close to me. But I stayed indoors and watched TV. Growing up all alone, it was not easy. And eventually I grew to love technology, including the first laptop that someone got for me. It was a whole new world for me to escape in. I could emulate Game Boy Advance and PlayStation. I tried stolen Wi-Fi and it was amazing. TV episodes would load if I stayed patient.
So did you steal Wi-Fi as a kid?
Yeah, so growing up, we didn't have Wi-Fi. There was a router in the living room, but my room was not anywhere close to it. So one house around me that had their Wi-Fi open, and I would sit in my room and try to play games, or I would watch a lot of anime. That was, obviously I didn't know the legalities of it at the time because I was young, but it was open and I needed internet.
I've informed you on what I need, and there's no question, just my music, my games, and my internet connection.
It's true, isn't it? At least for me, that's all I needed growing up. So Omai grew up in Brooklyn, and his passion with computers started in junior high.
I need to explain New York first, right? So the way the New York school system works is that once you reach the eighth grade, you get this big book of schools in New York, and there's a lot of schools in New York, and you have to apply for your schools that you want to go to. So when I was in junior high school, there was one school called Brooklyn Tech, and I actually failed to get into that school because I didn't score high enough. But what happened was my music teachers in junior high school, they saw that. They saw where I was planning on going, and someone put my name on a list of standby people to get into Brooklyn Tech. And Brooklyn Tech is very technical heavy, right? So they had like an aerospace engineering major. Like this high school had majors. That's how serious it was. I was like, yeah, you know, I got a thing. You know, I got in, and my major in high school was computer science. And so I took AP Java, computer architecture, like a prep for an A+ course, but like all these technical, like really in-depth courses, which I failed most of them because I stopped going to classes like halfway through. But that was my exposure, my initial exposure to most of the tech industry. I did pretty well. Like I did like the projects and stuff. I just didn't go to class half the time.
Yeah. And then how were you into music at the time?
So that was from junior high school when I was in band. Mm-hmm. I picked up alto saxophone and I was playing that for a couple of years. And then when I got to high school, New York has what's called the All-State bands. So there was All-State Marching Band, All-State Jazz Band. So I joined the All-State Marching Band, and eventually I picked up like baritone saxophone and French horn and trombone. I was just playing all these instruments, and I was like, yeah, I'm gonna go be a video game composer when I leave high school. And that, I mean, that didn't happen, but that was the goal at the time.
Huh. That makes me think, are people who make music for video games also nerdcore musicians? I mean, shoot, some of the rappers here are taking video game sounds and putting them in their songs. So maybe. Well, Omai was really into video games and computers at the time, which he says in one of his songs sort of made him different.
Let's say I'm not black because I'm a nerd that speaks with eloquence while pronouncing the entire word. But the whole idea of that is really quite absurd. So listen up for a bit and you might concur. Yes, I'm an educated man from Brooklyn. Yes, I'm a nerd, but there's no need to sink your hooks in and try to...
So, okay. The first thing I understand is that in a lot of black neighborhoods, right, there's like an expectation, at least back in the 90s and maybe still now, you sort of fit in a certain way, right? So if you like certain things or if you talk a certain way, people will say, oh, you talk like you're white, right? You talk all proper, all that kind of stuff. And it was kind of one of those things that at the time, like, I was like, oh, okay, sure. But it was like one of those things that kind of stuck with me because it made me feel like I didn't fit in at the time. Especially going to a school like in Fort Greene, right in Brooklyn, which now isn't as black as it used to be, but it's definitely got gentrified. But it was one of those things just growing up. It was what I was told by like other people, right, who look like me. It was you're too white, or you like white girls or something like that. It was kind of like, okay, sure.
So if you walk around claiming that I'm more lame because I ain't into sports games, you leaving me shortchanged. An individual, no need to conform, shame. It's my life, I ain't talking about the board game. You had no clue I could rap? Well, I'm not surprised. Sorry for causing so much trouble when I rock the mic. I always shoot for the...
And for whatever reason, there's always been this expectation that, like, because I'm tall, right, that I play basketball. So I've never really gotten into playing sports. I never really... cared too much to watch it. I get really annoyed when people have that put that expectation on me, like I'm supposed to know something. I joined the Navy and I left. I left New York and I was doing electronics. So I had my hands in a lot of like deep network and radar electronic stuff.
He spent years in the Navy doing this stuff and he was thinking about getting out and doing something else, but then he saw a new opportunity.
The Navy has this role for cryptologic technicians for networks who do mostly, that's like the cyber field for the Navy. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to give this a shot. I'll stay in for 4 more years and see how it goes.
He ended up spending 10 years in the Navy. And then he got out of there and transitioned back to civilian life.
I'm back.
It's the return of the own. It's the return of the own.
/rapper, the return of the own. I'm settling for nothing less than usurping the throne. No matter if it's on computers or I'm heard on a phone, the observer my tones and hoods and suburban homes. Finished 10 years in the Navy drinking bourbon Patron, and I finished up my bachelor's while learning to pwn. Nerd in the zone, thought I was deserving a clone. Full-time job, full-time student, I emerged fully grown. Now I'm back in attendance.
So when he got out of the Navy, he got a job as a penetration tester.
Your network security level way down. Nothing can stop me, I'll find my way round. Taking over your DC, nothing is safe now. This might be your network, but it's my domain now.
I'm scanning networks for practice, checking your ports. I am scanning for access, enumerating services. Better apply your patches, I'll search voids. Exploit DB knows what the hack is. Yo, you need to fortify heavily. I see your database services in version 1 SMB. You know what this nerd gon' do. Payloads, I'm eternal you. This quad fool will make you sad forever, that's eternal blue. Dumping hashes when I'm loading up that Mimi cat. Credits to my boy John, see how many he can crack. Smash and I grab on that lateral path. Fake moving blunts when I say that I'm passing the hash. Not a script kiddie, they ain't the level I'm on. I'm a snake charmer, watch me dance around some python and generate shell code for surfaces I find on your network. Pop a shell like you're right on.
So when I was a web app pen tester, and as I was doing this pen test for whatever site it was, they had ASP, right? And I was like, oh, what can I do with this?
He decided to write his own tool to give him command line access to this machine.
And so like being able to take over an entire box, to me was like super exciting. So the first time I did it, and being able to take over an entire box just through a web shell and like writing .NET payloads and all these other cool things that people were doing, that I was just kind of like, oh, you're doing cool research in .NET. Let me go figure out how to write this web shell. It was definitely an experience. It was like one of my favorite experiences from that job.
No antivirus products? Guess you've never heard of those. I'm on that Willy Wonka, got the golden ticket Kerberos. You actively blind, I'm tapping your lines, homie. All your unsecured traffic is mine, homie. Why your boss browsing porno in the workday? No good, he about to catch a virus in the worst way. He's staring at a lot of chicks, but all I'm getting out of it, the site he's peeping is mining Monero with some JavaScript. And I bet he won't like that. I'm just trying to get paid to be a white hat. Open my report and I'ma write that and show the impact of an attacker and put him on the right track.
I wrote that song specifically for my resume. Because I knew that like getting out the Navy, getting a job was going to be a little hard, and I had some experiences with some companies who explicitly mentioned that they had a hard time hiring veterans because of personality issues and like personality conflicts. But I just wanted to do something unique for my resume, and so I just left the link to the song at the bottom of the footer.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, check out this song, like hire me please. Please.
Well, how did it work?
It didn't. So, the companies that interviewed me, the song aside, I just didn't get hired. So I already knew it was going to be an uphill battle.
Did they comment at all on like, oh, cool song, but no.
So one of the companies, that was like one of the first things they brought up on the phone interview, the phone screening. And I was like, I guess it worked. So, I guess I did a good thing there.
Omai's really into Python. He learned it while in the Navy, but he's been using it ever since. His Twitter bio even says, Python is life. So I asked him, how does being good at Python make you good at doing security work?
Oh man, Python makes it easy, right? So there's, because like Python is like super well supported by, you know, so many people, and there's always someone writing a new library somewhere. It makes it one of the most versatile languages. I would say that like no matter what your field is in InfoSec, you can probably use Python for something, because there's always something that you can automate. There's always something that you can make easier. And for sure, Python is one of the most approachable languages to do that in.
Like any human, nerdcore rappers suffer from loss and heartbreak too. Here's how Omai brings his relationship experiences into his music.
Sometimes I look back and I think about the times that the two of us were fearless lovers. Then we fell apart and we both had broken hearts, but we never got to clear our buffers. So you remain in memory, we both try to pretend to be okay when we get near each other. Two threads caught in a deadlock,
got the process dead stopped. You thought I had a show you could crack easier than a password hash without a salt. I thought we were on the same page when I moved into the region, but turns out there was a page fault. We played the game, lost direction, no D-pad. Thought we would float after we dipped, no teabag. You tried the course correct, there was still a deep drag, but it was a hard drive, we needed to defrag.
Oh yeah, so that song is about my ex-girlfriend. I am not a very emotionally available person. I will say that out loud. So it was basically that, right? I don't always open up to people, and so yeah. And I sent her that song, and she didn't understand any of the references. So I was like, this is just me expressing my feelings. So
you execute a code in my mind, and you'll find that your thread dropped a lot of files. But then the process died, now your code is orphaned. That's a problem, child. All the while,
it does seem comical at the same time as sad. And all of this nerdcore seems comical, of like, oh my gosh, I get that joke, but I feel so nerdy getting it.
Yeah, and then that's definitely the vibe that I think a lot of like that nerdcore has gone for, like, since inception, is like, man, I get this particular line because I can relate to it.
Mm-hmm. I've got my X's in RAM.
Now, Omai is working on the red team at Azure. This is the cloud computing service that Microsoft offers.
So our job is to perform red team assessments against teams working on Azure products and services. So we're an internal team, right? We don't do customer facing engagements, and we basically just hack away and try to find new things either within Azure or against specific teams and how they organize their infrastructure or whatever else they have to organize.
But get this, while, yeah, he's hacking on Azure itself sometimes, his scope goes way beyond the product.
Right. So if you take, like, Azure Functions, for example, right, we're not looking for vulnerabilities in Azure Functions. That's for the product engineer teams and security assurance team. We're looking for ways to hack the Azure Functions development team, right, and any vulnerabilities that they may have that might lead us to take over the service, for example. Which, you know, has bigger implications down the line.
Wow, that's crazy, huh? He's trying to hack the people who work at Microsoft in order to help keep Microsoft products more secure. Wild. The last song I want to leave you with from Oh My, it's called Tabs. I absolutely love it.
I got tabs in the browser, I got tabs. Tab bars in my browser, always crowded on the daily. Always filled with some bull or some articles I may read. If you saw the way my windows look, you'd call me crazy. I be spawning tabs like rabbits when they making babies. It's a maybe if you ask me if I ever plan to close them. Never knowing if I need them, so they stay there for the moment. Always open up a new tab whenever I'm browsing. Tab count flex like Goku, over 9,000. I got these tabs in my phone. Internet Explorer is not a browser, I'm tabbing in Chrome. Tabbing at home, every time I open up a new window, my tabbing is grown, back to the bone. When it comes to browsing, I am the key, keeping tabs on the throne. That is a stone, keep it in memory like all the RAM for the tabs that I own.
I got tabs in the browser, I got tabs. I got tabs in the browser, I got tabs. I got tabs in the browser.
Our last musical act is none other than Dual Core.
Yes, I am Int 80. I'm the rapper in Dual Core, and I consent to this recording for the use of Darknet Diaries.
Okay, just to clear things up, Int 80 is the name of the rapper, the guy we're talking with, and Dual Core is the name of the rap group.
I'm beyond excited to be on the podcast. Your podcast is literally my favorite one. I've listened to every single episode. I can't say that about any other podcast.
Dang.
And as soon as new episodes come out, it's like the first thing that I listen to.
Whoa, it's always a trip for me to meet someone and find out that we have mutual respect for each other's work. I really dig Dual Core's music too. Here, check this out.
My multicast datagram IP flow spreads across routers, making every neck glow. Exponential growth, rate is out of control. Forced to DDoS and CMOS everywhere it goes. I stand for the purity of art and craft. And the overflow buffer always causing a crash. Every track's pick facts, vocal tones dispatched. Always working hard, but I've been known to kick back.
So you ready to start?
Sure, let's do it.
All right, so what was going on in high school? Were you a nerd then?
Absolutely. Yeah, I got in trouble in high school. I took a C++ programming class and using NetSend, I sent a message to all the Windows computers saying there was a virus in the system. And I waited until everybody had logged out at the end of the class period. And the next class period came in and they all logged in and got this message box popping up saying there was a virus. And I got kicked off the computers for like a week.
And it was in high school where he started making music.
I listened to hip hop. There was a kid that I used to program and hack with on AOL, and he lived in New Jersey. And so we would either be talking about hacking or programming or hip hop. And we'd have discussions of who the best rapper was, et cetera. And he's actually the one that got me started rapping. He sent me an email with a rap verse that he wrote about how he was a better hacker than I was. And I paid it no mind because I knew that I was a better hacker than him. And he kept bugging me to write a response back. So eventually I wrote a response, and that was my first rap verse that I ever wrote. And it was about how I was a better hacker and programmer than he was.
My first time online, 1995, my neighbor's new computer. We took it for a ride, addicted from the start, and it wasn't ending soon. In JPEG room, seeing women in the nude. But that's not my interest. Time I could invest. Delta trees and Trojans. Computers I could infect. Hold on, I'm getting ahead of myself. Take a step
back. I remember making my first website, and I was just learning HTML, but obviously I didn't know HTML particularly well. And I went to paste something into an IM to somebody, and I thought I had some other content in the clipboard, but what I had was the markup from the website that I was building, and it was all messed up, and it crashed AOL, or it froze it, or something bad happened. And I was curious as to what happened, so I looked at what was in my clipboard, and it was the markup from my website, and there were some syntax errors, like the tags or the values were wrong or something. And at that point, I realized, okay, what if I intentionally put bad values in the markup and then send that to somebody? And so then I just started kind of manually fuzzing, putting in strange values, like having a font size of a bunch of nines, or starting the HTML with like an ending HTML tag. And so what would happen is there were all these bugs in the AOL client, and you would get kicked offline, or AOL would freeze up or crash, or something bad would happen. And at the time, it was dial-up, so it took you like 10 minutes to get back online. So you'd be in a chat room, and someone would argue with you, and you'd turn off your IMs and send them an IM with this awful HTML in it, and their client would crash, and they would go away and get kicked offline.
Take a step back, started making fan sites of artists that could rap. Pasted some code in an IM to start up. AOL choked, it was frozen on the markup. Came across proggies and tools made by others. Kicking people offline, the scene called them gunners. Had the best strings, it would crash and hold the throne. So I couldn't give them out, had to code it on my own. VB3 downloading, feeling out of place.
And so I used to trade these punch strings, this malformed HTML, for stolen accounts so that I could keep access. My parents would always get upset with me for some reason, and then they'd take away my AOL access. And so I had all these stolen accounts so that I could continue having access to the internet. And what really drove me into programming was I had a secret stash of punch strings that I refused to share to anybody because they were so good. And so I needed a way to weaponize those. And so that drove me to learning Visual Basic and the Windows API so that I could write my own punchers to then kick people offline.
Dualcore actually collaborated with Whitey Cracker on this song. It's called I Remember.
Digital gangster, he made a splash in a couple private rooms in 98 if my man is correct. I got immediate respect in my past with the freaking and the hacking and the spamming for cash. Just ask Astro.
I actually did not want to do computers as a career. I went to school. I have a Bachelor of Arts in Political Science. And I wanted to be a lawyer, and I really enjoyed classes like civil liberties and criminal justice. I really enjoyed doing case studies, writing about dissenting opinions and concurring opinions. And I always thought of the movie The Matrix, where they show Thomas Anderson in his cubicle after he's just been yelled at by his boss. And it just looks like such a drab situation to be in. So that was my stereotypical view when I was younger about what having a career in computers would be like. But I was approaching graduating from my political science degree, and I went to a law day at a law school, and learning about how much you had to read and write was unbearable for me. So I decided hacking computers is really fun, and maybe I can get a job doing that, or at least programming and you know, building web apps and stuff, which is something I had been doing at that point.
His first computer job was doing website development. He then started hanging out at security meetups, and from there he got an internship doing security work. After that, he went to get a job doing application security, which is where he's paid to find bugs in the software that the company makes.
Right, except I was a consultant, so I would basically be on like a five-day engagement, and we would do white box or black box assessments, white box being where you have exposure to the entire source code, and black box where you're just targeting just like a regular site or an application without any knowledge of its source code. And then yeah, you for the first 4 days, you're pretty much hacking and just trying to find bugs, unfortunately. Like I think in one of my first assessments, I think I like pivoted through the network and got domain admin and checked in with the engagement manager and said, okay, I've got domain admin, now what? And they're like, no, that's not what you're supposed to do. You're just supposed to take a screenshot of the alert box and put that in the report.
Down door frame, again from the start, when computers had tubes. I don't mean the internet's the real vacuums. With diodes and relays to shoot for the moon. Just one system filled a whole room. Advanced back then to write plenty tracks. On top of Colossus, Zack Deniac. Back in the 50s, before they had help, my AI deceived even Turing himself.
Let's see, at that point, I think we had just started dual core. So I know we started dual core in 2006. That was when we were making our first album, 01. In 2007, that was when we released our first album, 01. And also in 2007 is when I got my first application security job. And I remember when I started at the company, people already knew about dual core, which was mind blowing to me because I was just some kid recording rap songs in a basement in Cincinnati. So it was a shock to walk into a place and people already knew my music that had only been out for a few months.
Let's play a game. Dial up NORAD's global thermo nuclear war pack. Rabbits and blue shots match my angle. The Da Vinci virus to capsize tankers. Large fortunes made of small amounts. Take a fraction of a penny out of everyone's account. Fire and ashes.
Dual core is two people. It's myself and Dady. I'm the rapper in the group. And then the other half is C64. So I write and record all the rap songs and I have the mustache. And C64 makes all the beats. He does all of the mixing. He does all of the artwork, does some of our social media stuff. And he's basically all of the talent in the group. And I'm just kind of the loud person in front.
Human surveillance, echelon intercepts, analyze evidence of discard irrelevance of signal intelligence. Looking for a flash of light in the black at night, passing by to satisfy.
Penny Arcade published a blog post about our album, which got our music in front of a bunch of listeners. And I kind of used that as a springboard to start booking shows as rapidly as I could. So I said, you know, Penny Arcade is a big fan of our music. Here's the link to their blog post. You should totally book Dual Core. And we ended up playing at DEF CON that year, just a few months after that. We were the first ever live hip hop act to play at DEF CON. And I've been playing every year since 2007, live in person, except for 2020 with the pandemic.
85 pounds on his frame made it pitiful, alive in his mind. He nurtured a trust, cause that was the only thing they couldn't touch. He took up hacking to push away comatose Proico exploits, races and overflows. He made two friends named Mike and Tim, and come to find out they were just like him.
Yeah, I then moved into a position doing reverse engineering, and I was essentially cracking copy protection. So companies would come in with copy protection that would go on a particular device, and they would want to know how fast it could be broken. And so we would we'd have three objectives usually. One would be to pirate the intellectual property. One would be to reverse engineer the protection, to get a full understanding of the protection, and then the third objective would be to tamper the protection without being detected.
Signed the first line, it was just 9 to 5. Quickly realized it became 9 to 9. 24/7, 365. A process that separated me from my life. Need to unplug, but you're still online, and you've got to pay the bills every month on time. Want all the hours, you can have them all fine. This is my life, so make it all mine. It's a road to success, no shortcut for steps. Instead, just another long day ahead. But I've got to do well, stand out, achieve. First person in, last one to leave. Time doesn't matter.
I went and worked at a social media platform that we all know and have probably used at some point. And I worked on building threat systems for them. So our goal was to be able to find any malware that was spreading or communicating across the platform, and then sandbox it, pick it apart programmatically, figure out what it was doing, siphon out indicators, and then build new signatures and put it all on our compute and fabric storage, and then programmatically associate it with any other families. And then we could put detections and filtering in place to stop future campaigns and alert victims that were on the platform.
While there, he discovered some malware on the platform which would mine Litecoin. This is a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin. He cleaned the malware off the infected systems, but he realized he could do more than just stop it in his network.
I reached out to the Litecoin mining pool and asked them if they would stop, stop all of the progress for this particular account. And I had evidence of these are the malware samples. Here's in the code where it's using your pool, et cetera. And also the malware had stages up on Dropbox. So I worked with Dropbox and said, this malware is staging off of your platform. Can we find all of the instances of it? And so Dropbox was able to find them all. And then the C2 was at some hosting company. So I reached out to the hosting provider and I said, hey, this malware is got its C2 on a VPS in your hosting setup. Can I get a copy of the VPS? And they said, sure. And they gave me a copy of the VPS. And that gave me all of the logs and keys that the malware authors used to log in and check into the C2. And then on a particular Friday, I said, hey, on this Friday coming up at 9 a.m. Pacific time, let's kill everything off. And so we did. We did this coordinated takedown. And that Friday at 9 a.m., the malware ceased to exist on the internet. And it was super fun. Science, the point I've almost mastered it. Such a vicious cycle. Can you see the pattern yet? No free minutes when I'm always working overtime. No, I go and try, but my life is broken, polarized. Work more and more. It's less time to socialize, and that's just a gamble. So why try and roll the dice? So after leaving the social media platform, I took a job as a red team operator. So I worked on the red team at Salesforce, and our job was basically to make the bad things happen. To be stepped on. Hackers are the future. We're the ones for you to bet on. Fuel to the fire like computers were a chevron. This is all decades, way before I met John. So I led on. Knowledge gives to wisdom. Got a job and it pays, and it doesn't end in prison. Help secure computers by installing malware in them. Hoping they don't twist it, turning me into the victim. We would start any red team operation with asking the question, what's the worst thing that can happen to this business? The Salesforce has a number of acquisitions, so there's always fresh attack surface for us to look at. And we basically would try to go after things that were really important or critical to the business, things that mattered the most. Because if you're handing in a report to executives and you just say, look, I popped an alert box, no executive understands why that's important, maybe not even what that is. But if you're able to say, I have a copy of all of your customer data, and I've put backdoors in the source code that makes your business run, and those are the most important things to your business, they're going to understand we're going to be out of business, or the stock's going to take a hit, or bad things are going to happen. And so we would do that kind of stuff, right? We would try to exfil customer data, or we would try to backdoor source code, or we'd break into places sometimes. And so trying to frame the objectives in a more high-level way and telling a story rather than just handing in a report that people might not read. Commanded and controlled, inject drop caps, cross site all that. Felon catching shells every time I hear a callback. One more story, one more hacker. Back to the past when the path got fractured. Sometimes calm, sometimes disaster. To the page and we start another chapter. Just another story, just another hacker. Just another past, up until it shattered. Sometimes calm, sometimes disaster. To the page and we start another chapter.
But that job didn't last long. If you Google DEFCON Salesforce, you'll see articles about a mishap that happened, and he got caught up in all that.
I have since pivoted into a cloud engineering kind of role. And so I build cool stuff, but I also break things. And so it's a nice balance of getting getting both sides of it, right? Being able to construct and then also tear down and see how to construct it better in the future.
Not every geek with a Commodore 64 can hack into NASA.
The song All the Things came about by randomly being at DEF CON one year, and a friend of mine, Virus from DC949, came up to me and said, "Hey, drink all the booze, hack all the things. That's how we're doing it this year." And I said, "Oh, that's cool. Like, sounds like fun." And my producer was in from the UK. He had flown all the way to Vegas. And also with me was Dale Chase. And we were rolling around playing parties, and I think it was our fourth party of the night. And we get there, and the whole pool place is packed. It's just, the pool area is just filled with people, all waiting for a dual core show. And so I say, like, all right. So we show up, and my producer and I are talking, and we're like, what if we played like a set where we just like, just kind of make it up as we go. And so my producer is like, sounds good. And C64 is just throwing on whatever beats that he wants to throw on. We're not sticking to any particular set, and we're just going for it. And so Dale and I are just kind of rapping verses. We're putting in hooks where we can. And my producer plays this one beat, and I said, let's do a freestyle. I like this beat. Sounds good. Let's do a freestyle. And so I just say, like, all right, in the chorus, I'm going to say, drink all the booze, and everybody yell, hack all the things. And it was amazing. Like, we started the freestyle, and we got to the chorus, and I yelled, drink all the booze. And it's, you know, 4 something in the morning in Vegas, and the entire pool area is just people screaming, hack all the things.
We drink all the booze.
Several years after the song had been out, I got an email, and it was a person who said, "Hi, like, I work on the game Watch Dogs at Ubisoft, and we're making Watch Dogs 2, but nobody knows yet. And I saw you play at DEF CON, and I need your music in the game. So can I, like, how do we do that?" And I said, "Send me an NDA, and we'll get everything set up, and we'll make it happen." And so they ended up including all the things in Watch Dogs 2.
The challenger, stay infiltrated, so undercover. This is for my comrades who stare at the debuggers and trace every buffer. Examining the code flow, haven't been to sleep, better pop another no-dos. I think I'll need a planet-sized urn, cause some men just wanna watch the world burn. Your turn.
Dual Core has continually grown more popular over time, and so much that he's been able to book live shows all over.
I played all across the U.S., Canada. I played in Colombia. I played in Brazil. I've played in Dubai. And I played all across Europe as well. We even did a 3-week tour, me and my producer, in the UK. But when I started, I always thought that my ideal week would look like hacking stuff Monday through Friday and then playing rap shows on the weekends. And that is the structure that I've kind of derived or composed and have stuck with all these years, and it's worked out really well. I've done some tours where, you know, we're on the road for anywhere from like 3 to 8 weeks, but for the most part, normal week for me is like Monday I go to work, and then Thursday or Friday I'll fly out and play shows, and then Sunday or Monday I'll fly back, and Monday I'm back at work again.
Dual Core has done some collaborations with other nerdcore rappers, but not all nerdcore rappers are hackers. Like we were saying earlier, some nerdcore rappers talk about video games and some talk about anime, but in order for Dual Core to collaborate with these other people, he created a file sharing system on his server that he set up. However, he set it up using SCP, which is a secure file transfer method, but that takes a couple steps to set up.
When I started doing collaborations with folks, I'd say, hey, here's a, like, send me your SSH public key, and I'll set you up with a user account, and then you can SFTP or SCP your waves up. And I thought, you know, everybody was a hacker like I was in the nerd rap scene. And I think Whitey Cracker was the only person that when I said that, he didn't blink an eye. He said, okay, no problem. Here's my SSH key. Good to go. Meanwhile, everybody else was like, what is SSH? What is a key? What is SCP? How do I get you the files? And so I always thought that was like a really funny experience, kind of having the realization that there aren't many hackers that are out making rap music.
And see, that's what I think is interesting about this sliver of music in the world. The lyrics are about this specific type of computer usage. But not only that, it's made by hackers themselves for other hackers who want to hear songs about hacking. Hey, I dig it. And after chatting with these guys, I really am surprised at how much they're actually doing security themselves. I don't know why, but I just assumed they were wannabe hackers. But no, they aren't. They really are doing this stuff. So now, when I listen to Nerdcore, I have a newfound respect for the musicians behind it. A big thank you to Whitey Cracker, Oh My, and Int80 from Dualcore. I never had guests bring their own soundtracks on before, but this was a fun ride. If you want to listen to just the music from this episode, I've created a playlist for you. Go to darknetdiaries.com/episode/78. While there, you'll find more about each of these artists, and really, dive into their music because they have a ton of songs to discover. Also, I want to give a big thanks to my Patreon members. Those who are donating to the show are a massive help for the show's success. Thank you so much. But I did the math, and less than 1% of my audience is helping the show through Patreon. Look, if you've gone through every episode and can't wait for new episodes, consider donating to the show. This tells me most of all that you like it and want more of it, which motivates me to keep going and make it better. If you want to help, please visit patreon.com/darknetdiaries. Thank you. This show is made by me, Sir Dollar String, Jack Reciter. Editing help this episode by the Funky Cherry, Damien, and our theme music is by Biggie Doom, aka Breakmaster Cylinder. And even though for some weird reason, I think 1024 is a perfectly round number, this is Darknet Diaries.